It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
That's right, you're listening to You Talk to Me. I'm your host, Big JD. And hey, I think I mentioned last week that acting coach Penny Templeton was going to be on the show this week. Not the case, my bad. Penny joins us next week. Make sure you keep an eye on the You Talking to Me website for upcoming shows and guests, even if I accidentally misinform you. Chances are the website will be correct. And by all means, if you or someone you know has an interesting story, career, life experience to share with listeners, then get in touch through the You Talking to Me website. It's youtalkingtome.ca, the letter U, talking, the number two, me.ca. And speaking of interesting careers, horticulture is definitely one. My guest today is owner-operator of Orchard Farm Nursery, a family business incorporated in 1957. Orchard Farm is a retail garden center, also specializing in residential landscape installation and maintenance. Please welcome Carl Klink to the show. Hey, Carl.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're happy. I think spring's finally here after a few false starts. So
yeah, we seem to be up and down, and it's pretty humid out there today. So obviously, you got your start in this business early on. I guess your dad used to take you on jobs as a kid.
Yeah, my dad was well known in the city as sort of the go-to guy for horticulture advice, and he was a landscape contractor designer as well. But yeah, he always took us along, made us feel like we were very important. Like he would never be able to measure something if we weren't holding the other end of the tape measure, that's for sure.
And you had cousins with a peach farm, I guess, in Alabama as a kid as well?
Yeah, that was a fun experience too. You know, people always ask, you know, how did you, you know, you I should back up a bit and say, you know, I do have a degree from Guelph, so I do have the letters after my name.
But a couple questions away.
But to answer your question though, we get into people say, where did you really learn everything? And I used to work on my grandma's vegetable farm when I was a kid. And one summer I even worked for my other grandmother's first cousin had a peach and nectarine farm down in Harvest, Alabama, mm-hmm. appropriately named. Yeah, and I worked there the whole summer and learned a lot about peaches and nectarines and life in the South. Yeah.
All I know is it tastes good.
That's it.
And you got a business degree as well?
Yeah, I went to University of Guelph, and, you know, Guelph is pretty good at teaching you the science, but they also want you to try and make a living, too, so they let you slide a few business courses in there and get a sort of a double major. Yeah, it was a great school.
And when you mentioned your grandmother's farm, I guess, or your grandparents' farm, that dates back, like, as far as the 40s, I guess?
Yeah, so In 1940, my grandparents bought 4 acres of land on North Talbot Road, which back then was a dirt road, and now there's streetlights, and we're on a bus route. But the that was their start, and my grandfather had grown up on a fruit farm, and as a lot of people in that era, had lots of links to agriculture. But yeah, they had a fruit stand and pick your own vegetables, and were sort of known for their sweet corn and sweet cherries and apples. And with that came the name. Everybody still to this day remembers my grandma sitting by the side of the road washing tomatoes, and they still call us Klink's.
Yeah,
after Klink's farm. So
it's obviously the same location,
still the same last name too.
Yeah. And so tell us about Orchard Farm Nursery, and you know, maybe your staff and where you're located there on North Talbot.
Well, over the years, it sort of evolved. Like I said, our roots way back, and the joke is our name is Orchard Farm Nursery, and we're neither an orchard, a farm, or a nursery now. We're really a garden center.
Okay.
And we focus in plant material, basically, hardy outdoor plant material, perennials, flowering shrubs, Japanese maples, ornamental grasses, dwarf evergreens, trees, shade trees, and that's sort of the primary part of our business. And we're on North Talbot Road, just east of Howard Avenue, which is now a residential area.
Mm-hmm. On a bus route.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you got young kids of your own. Are they helping as well like you did when you were a kid, or are they interested?
Yeah, they like to get dirty. So yeah. That's the first That's the first start. If the kids are allowed to get dirty and play in the mud, they take and they're outside all the time, they start taking interest. So,
I interviewed not that long ago a bug farmer, and they have young kids, and they just love it, getting dirty and dealing with bugs, and
I think sometimes we're a little too sterile these days, and gonna be scared of bugs.
Yeah. Now, I know you focus on landscaping projects and things like that as well a little, and I guess you do it in a more old-fashioned way, is something that I read.
Yeah, I mean, we've been described that way before, and I'll describe ourselves that way too, and I mean it as a compliment. We are, you know, sometimes when you think of landscaping, you're thinking of big commercial property development, which is certainly an important part of landscaping and the urban forest. And, there was once upon a time where, you know, you'd have a shopping center and just miles of pavement. Now it is mandated that trees and green space are also allowed for in the plan. But that's not really our bag of tricks. We're more, you know, we take care of properties where, you know, we might do something from plant one tree to developing an entire backyard for a brand new house, and then we continue usually a relationship where we help take care of that garden and nurture it over the years. So I guess in that sense we're not just a bunch of guys driving around bobcats and forklifts making a lot of racket. We're actually using old tools like shovels and pitchforks and mulch and compost and playing in the dirt. So sort of along the tradition of the old-fashioned landscape gardener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And mostly residential?
Is that most of our business is residential, and that's sort of what we've always been good at and what we like doing, so we keep doing it. Some people generally at their home, their garden is really an extension of their home. So when you're welcomed into their house into their home to help them develop something or fix something or enhance something on their property, you're really kind of almost part of the family. So it's a little more rewarding because they really, really care about what you've created for them or what you've helped them with. And I find that a lot more satisfying than doing a job for, you know, a shopping center because, you know, the city said they had to plant five trees. So they're going to plant five trees. They're not doing it because they love it or they want it, but because they have to.
And you guys also help out with charities and things like that. What kind of things have you done in that respect?
We do a lot of things. I mean, sometimes it's just simply, you know, supporting some of the local horticulture societies with their silent auctions and some of the good work they do. Other times it's through, Landscape Ontario. I've always been active in Landscape Ontario, and that's sort of a provincial organization with a local chapter, and we've been involved over the years raising money for St. Clair College scholarship fund for horticulture students. Recently last fall we have just begun a project with Eastwood Public School that's hopefully going to evolve into something more, but last fall we planted 7 or 8 trees in an area where they hope to create an actual outdoor classroom. This year, the next step, hopefully they're going to be planting some things that attract birds and butterflies and really turn it into a kind of a neat outdoor space. And it was fun. We got to work with the kids a bit and get some stuff in the ground and put some forest back in Forest Glade.
Yeah, there you go. And you also do some public speaking as well?
Yeah, I've been, over the years, I've always happily accepted any opportunities to, help out and share my knowledge and like I say, through some of the hort societies and occasionally filled in at St. Clair College to teach a course or two and done different pruning demonstrations or small speaking engagements at different local garden shows or home shows over the years. But
which, by the way, at St. Clair, you guys did, was it called Winter Blooms Garden Show for a number of years there?
Yeah, Winter Blooms Garden Show was fun. That ran for 5 years at St. Clair College. Then it was sort of mothballed for a year, and then it was recreated this year as part of the home show at the Fogelaar. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it sort of evolves over the years, but Yeah, it's winter blooms. Keep your eyes open for it. You'll see that name again in some form or another. It always has a, whether it's big or small, winter blooms always has a display garden component to it and an educational component to it, where different experts from far and wide or from the local area are there giving information to the public. So
we're located in the banana belt here. Can you explain that? And is that a good thing for us?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, this is...
Can we grow bananas?
There, you know, it's funny. A dwarf banana plant is sort of a popular foliage plant now that you might see in the odd planter, but you're not actually going to grow it big enough and long enough to get bananas on it. But
yeah.
you can... You can show your friends that if they're from out of town. Yeah, I think, some people think we're exaggerating by calling it the Nana Belt. And I always say, yeah, but you know what? Till people live here, they really don't understand, you know. And, a story I tell is, I have relatives of my wife's that came over from Scotland. You know, they say, oh, yeah, we're looking forward to the heat. And then they come here and they're like, whoa, we didn't really, like, no one just really gets it till they get here.
Uh-huh.
I got a guy working for me. This year he's down and he's new to Windsor, but he's originally from Thunder Bay, and we're having fun with him as he discovers the fact how lush it is and how hot it is. You know, this guy was sweating yesterday and we still had the wood stove on, but yeah, but really, to answer your question, the banana belt, yes, we can grow the most aside from Victoria, BC, we grow the most diverse batch of perennials and flowering shrubs and trees in anywhere in Canada, and whether it's our exotic varieties or our native varieties, there's more diversity here than just about anywhere in Canada, and it makes it a fun place to be a gardener or a landscaper, and there's just a lot of different stuff you can play with. There's always something new too.
And I want to get into some of the frequently asked questions that you guys get asked there, and I think that's going to be great. I want to do that after the break, which is coming up soon. But are there certain outdoor plants or flowers that are best suited for our area here, and especially maybe that will rebloom after the cold season kind of thing? Is that good?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what kind of gardener you are. I mean, there are some people that are the real diehard gardeners that, you know, they want to go out every year, dig up their whole yard and almost start from scratch, and these people plant things from seed and transplant them outside, and they're happy to do all that work. But most people have busy lives and they kind of like their yard to look pretty and calming and tranquil, but they don't necessarily want to start from scratch every year. They don't have the time or the budget or the inclination. So my advice is always to remember that everything looks beautiful in the spring. You can't go wrong. And all kinds of things flower in the spring. All kinds of things look nice and lush in the spring. It really is important to keep in mind how extremely hot and how extremely dry it can get in Essex County in the summer months. And you know, when you're walking around a garden center, really, you know, ask the staff and read the labels and pick stuff that's going to be able to put up with that, a little bit of our extreme conditions without you having to rush home after work every night and with a watering can and baby it, you know. Mm-hmm. Pick some survivors, you know, that can take the heat and the drought and the wind.
Now, you kind of mentioned some of the reasons why people, you know, plant flowers and different things for the tranquility and for, you know, relaxation, all those different things. Are those hanging plants still a popular thing at all?
The old baskets,
yeah, yeah.
The geraniums in them that your grandma had.
Are there new innovative things that are available now that are comparable to that kind of thing, or are those, you know what I mean?
I mean, it's funny, sometimes it's like fashion. You know, you can look back and say, oh, that was what everybody wore in the 80s, or that's what everybody wore in the 70s. But
yeah,
you know, and gardening's a little bit like that too, where there are certain styles that sort of dominate certain eras, and you might say, well, you know, if your mom had a real wild, rambling, relaxed, cottagey garden, sometimes the kids will have the same thing, or sometimes the kids sort of almost rebel and the next generation shifts back to a very formal, structured garden. But right now it's kind of an interesting time. Things are very diverse. You're going to find everything from that old-fashioned white plastic hanging basket with a geranium plant in it to some new funky thing somebody discovered in the tropics and's got a got growing there, something like your purple banana plant or something.
Well, I guess those hanging things went out with the swag lamps when we used to hang the lamps with the chains and everything. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll ask Carl some of the more frequently asked questions of his nursery and staff, so don't go away because you don't want to miss this.
You're listening to You Talking to Me with Big JD on CJAM 99.1 FM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
Do you have an interesting career? You have an interesting life experience to share with others. If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking to Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
All right, we're back. Carl Klink is with me from Orchard Farm Nursery. Tell us where the nursery is located again.
We're at 820 North Talbot Road in South Windsor, so that's just east of Howard Avenue.
Okay, and what about hours of operation, you guys?
We are May and June. Our hours are Monday to Thursday, 9 to 5. We're open till 6 on Friday and Saturday, and 10 till 4 on Sunday. So 7 days a week, no rest for the wicked.
Cool. And I understand that you don't have a website at this time. Is that something that you guys are considering, or the Facebook thing, the social networking and marketing thing come into play at all yet for you guys?
You know, we've been, honestly probably procrastinating a little bit on that. And
yeah.
It's funny. In some ways, we use the most current techniques, the most current equipment. And then other ways that we kind of just sort of figure, even though there's a huge appeal to website and there's certainly a big visual part of our business, it'd be nice to be able to go online and look at pictures. I still say, you know, the best video tour, there's nothing like actually coming out and feeling and seeing and touching the plants and really see what they look like in real life. But eventually we'll get into that. But, you know, we're not totally low tech. We still we still do communicate by email, and sometimes people call up on the phone and say, "Hey, you know, I got this funny looking leaf," and it's like, "Well, I'm not sure what's going on." And yeah, well, people email us pictures, and sometimes we offer some advice that way too. So,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. So, all right, I want to ask you some frequently asked questions that you guys are often asked from customers and callers to your garden center. And the first one being, what do you do about grubs?
Grubs are a popular topic of discussion this time of year, and partly because...
And tell everybody what a grub is.
A grub is...
I know, but...
A grub is...
I had to look it up.
A grub's basically a lovely, white, fleshy worm that's eating the roots of your grass in your lawn. Or it could be icky, depending if you don't like them or not. But the short story is, what happens with a grub is there's Japanese beetles and other beetles, all beetles, part of their life cycle. The adults are very short-lived. They emerge in the summer. They fly around. They feed a little bit. They mate. They lay eggs, and they die. And those eggs sit there in your lawn, and they hatch out into white grubs. And from late summer till early fall, that grub goes from being a couple millimeters long to being a meal on Fear Factor. White grub might actually end up being 2 inches long. Wow. And if you imagine anything that goes from being a couple millimeters long to being a couple inches long, you know, increases body weight about, you know, 1,000 times. Well, guess what? It ate an awful lot, didn't it? And what it's eating are the roots of your lawn. And, you know, I've, in all the years of doing landscaping, I've never dug up anyone's lawn to put a new garden in or plant a tree without finding at least one grub. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, they're nothing to get too fired up about. However, the fact is that some years are worse than others. And most people still have this animal instinct that in the spring, you're going to go out and get your hands dirty and get in the garden, and that also happens to coincide with the times when there's a lot of grubs and a lot of grub damage. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being one of those things that gardeners always ask about, and they say, well, what should I do about them? And sometimes the answer is nothing, because by the time you see a grub in the spring, it's already done all its damage. Your lawn might have some bare patches, it might be dug up a little bit, and you're thinking, geez, those white grubs, I want to get rid of them. And yes, it really is a revenge killing at that point.
Yeah.
You're not actually going to solve the problem by killing them. What you should do is get some grass seed, get some fertilizer, fill in the patches of your lawn, and keep your eyes open in the summer, looking for the beetles flying around, Japanese beetles, European chafer, these kinds of beetles flying around and laying eggs. And if you see a lot of those and you think you might have a grub problem again, what you can do proactively is in late summer, late August, you can put down nematodes, which are a natural organism that will colonize the soil of your lawn and infect the white grubs before they can cause any damage. And the nematodes are a great way to go because they don't affect the earthworms or the birds that eat them either. So the other thing that happens with grubs in the spring is that skunks and birds will eat most of the white grubs that have overwintered. Now, in the process, they're going to rototill your lawn a little bit for you. But the fact is there is this gut reaction to say, well, you know, I have a headache, I want to take an aspirin. Sometimes what you need is a nap, but you don't necessarily have to spray anything on your grubs to control them this time of year. Sometimes just to get the grass grown and deal with it later in the summer. Yeah.
And speaking of grass, then, when is the best time to put down grass seed?
Right when it's wet and warm is the best time. And, so a day like today is a good time to do it. Uh-huh. But the textbook answer is either put grass seed down in the early fall, like such as mid-September, and let it come up and thrive in that cool damp weather of the fall and late fall, early winter. And it has all that time to grow roots before it has to face the heat of the summer. Or you put it down in April or May when it's got time to come up and get established again before the heat of the summer. You can grow grass seed just about any time. The problem is new, freshly emerged grass is very vulnerable to being dried out in the heat and the wind. So if you're going to do it in July, you're going to be using a heck of a lot of water to keep it alive. So mm-hmm. Now Mother Nature will help you along.
And what's the significance of May 2-4, people asking if they should plant their gardens at that time?
Well, May 2-4 is that traditional cutoff time. Like, part of it's because it's a holiday. There's no magical climatic reason that says that exactly May 2-4 we're never going to have a chance of frost again. I mean, you hate to say it, but it's Canada. It could snow in June if you really wanted it to. But certainly this kind of year, where we, you know, on Sunday night it was -2, and it's sometimes it's good to remember to, as much as we encourage people to get out and plant everything, and it's certainly safe to put all your trees and shrubs and perennials in the ground right now, but if you're talking about planting flowers in your vegetable garden, you really ought to hold off until the long weekend, Victoria Day weekend, Memorial Day weekend. Unless you've got your plants on wheels and you're going to wheel them in your garage every night, there's still a good chance of frost. So, unless you have enough money, you want to buy your flowers twice, but when they freeze. So
that's good for you guys.
Yeah. That's here.
And now ornamental grass, which I guess is another name for pretty grass, I suppose.
Sure.
Is that,
yeah,
what that is? Now, that's when you get asked how far back someone should cut that grass. And now, is that cutting the grass itself or where it's located?
Yeah, well, both really. Okay. You know, ornamental grasses have become really popular in the past number of years. One, they're a very low maintenance plant, don't need a lot of fertilizer, don't need a lot of care, they're not vulnerable to many insects and disease. They're also extremely drought tolerant. And as a bonus, they kind of sway in the wind and give sort of a tropical feel to your landscaping, especially if you plant them around a pool or a pond or something. The thing is, ornamental grasses, like you said, they're pretty grasses, but they're someone else's weeds, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, they're very vigorous and very hardy, and you know, a lot of time, this is the time of year where you go in the spring and that big, lush, beautiful grass plant you had last year now is a pile of brown stubble with a little bit of green coming up through it. Most grasses, as a rule, if they turn completely brown in the fall and they're totally brown in the spring, you cut them down to about 2 inches off the ground. If they stay green over the winter, wait till the new growth comes out and just cut off the old growth. Uh-huh. And if the clump gets too big on you, on a nice damp weekend like this, you take the whole clump out of the ground, get a saw or an axe out, chop the clump in half, give those pieces to your friend or your neighbor, and reduce the size of your clump, replant it right away, and you can keep that ornamental grass plant going for years and years.
Mm-hmm. Will the hot, cold, I guess the changes of the seasons that we have here hurt trees?
There's some minor damage out there. As I mentioned, Sunday night it went down to about -2, and some plants that had come out really early had a chance to sort of harden off, and they're fine. And then some plants that came out a little bit later seemed to actually have some frost damage on it. So you'll see some trees with a few black leaves that are going to drop off as the new growth comes on. You're going to see some shrubs that, you know, you kind of wince when you look at them and think, whoa, is that thing going to live? I would suggest, for the most part, that plants have been on this earth a heck of a lot longer than people, and they'll survive just fine without us. But don't jump the gun and start cutting off all the dead leaves and the frosted leaves right now. I'd suggest wait a couple weeks, let the new growth come on. If the damaged leaves aren't useful to the plant will naturally shed them, and the new growth will be just fine and unaffected by the, you know, anything that emerges in the warm weathers is going to be unaffected by the cold weather we just had. So,
and speaking of trees, is there something that they're spraying on trees now that is invisible and comparable to what they used to paint up part of the tree with white stuff? I don't know what it was, but I think it was something for pests and things like that, I guess. You know what I mean? And in the past, you see a tree and somebody had painted part of it white.
Yeah, you know, an old-fashioned technique was especially with fruit trees, you would see trees that were painted white, and they used to use actually lime.
Okay.
To paint them, and part of the reason for that was to control pests and disease, but it also, by having the trunk of the tree white, it reflected the heat in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have the freeze thaw on the bark and you didn't have that cracking. It ended up being one of those things that just sort of became extremely popular in Europe and kind of found its way over to North America. And a lot of times it was done out of habit and not really for any particular reason. So you don't really see that too much anymore, yeah?
Yeah, I know. I don't see it anymore. Now, lastly, do you have any plant suggestions for those working on their yards now that the nicer weather's come?
You know, I one of my favorite things to see in the garden is, like I said, everything looks pretty right now. There's all kinds of flowering stuff. But if you go in the nursery right now and you just pick up something that's in bloom, you know, come July, you might not have anything in flower anymore. And I really think it's important to remember things like hibiscus and butterfly bush and some of these things that bloom in the late part of the summer, some of the hydrangeas that have flowers all the way through the end of September, mm-hmm. some of the shrub roses, which will bloom right up to Thanksgiving. I mean, and then also the trees that give you fall color. I mean, I hate to talk about fall right now because we're just heading into summer, but it's just important to remember all the seasons, not just to sort of do that impulse buy of the thing that's in flower. You know, really consider all the seasons and the all the months of the year when you might actually be enjoying your yard when you're selecting your new plants.
Cool. Well, it was great having you on the show. Tell us one more time where we can find Orchard Farm Nursery.
It's Orchard Farm Nursery Limited, 820 North Talbot Road, just east of Howard in South Windsor. And all the old customers still call us Clanks, established 1957. Thanks.
All right, Carl. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, JD.
All right. Well, I'm sure you now have some insight into your garden and landscaping plans for the year, thanks to Carl Klink and Orchard Farm Nursery. And I will now correctly announce acting coach Penny Templeton on the show next week. She's coached many television and film stars. She talks about that and her book, Acting Lions. It happens next week right here on You Talking to Me. I'm Big JD. Thanks for listening.